All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is Halloween, October 31st, 2023. Beautiful. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's not a beautiful day outside. It is, well, listen, it's all perspective, right? It's all how you look at it. I actually think it is beautiful, but it's cold, it's windy, and it's raining. And it is not close to what we had yesterday, but it was coming, right? It is strange, but it seems like every year that there's a dramatic weather change right at either the day before, the day of, or the day after Halloween. It just never fails. It's like I remember trick-or-treating and it being hot, the next day freezing cold. I remember the day before it being hot and then trick-or-treating and it being freezing cold. So it's like this always, but it's like this hard line. It seems like Halloween is the day. And right on schedule, yesterday was nice, and then by the end of the night it was cold, and it is cold today, so the kids will be obviously trick-or-treating in different weather than we had yesterday, but it's all good. This season, the big train keeps it rolling, man. And I'm super grateful. Grateful to be sober today. I thought I would just sit down. It is Tuesday. I'm working today. Big, big day of work. I am finally feeling better. I know I keep saying that, but you know what it's like to kind of get sick and then to kind of get better. It slowly happens. But every day I feel a little bit better, a little stronger. My spirits are higher. And I don't sound like shit as bad. I shouldn't say. I don't sound as sick. I'm sure I still sound a little sick. But I am feeling better mentally and spiritually, and that's all that matters. I went to the meeting last night. It was awesome. It was on the first step. You know, excuse me. I've been jumping around different meetings. You know, it was told to me, if you don't like a meeting, find a different meeting, right? If there's something, if you don't like a person, sit next to them, right? There's always been these little suggestions because, you know, we do a lot of meetings. I can tell you as a person that goes, especially in the early days, I went to a meeting every day. You can get pretty saturated in the program. What's going on? We got bells a ding in here. But you can get pretty saturated in a lot of meetings, and I can tell when I need a new meeting because I start to get cynical, and I start the voice, right? It gets very quiet, but it starts telling me, you have nothing to share, right? You have nothing to say. Nobody cares. It starts to turn on me. We eat our young, and I know when that starts happening, it's time for me to find another meeting. And I've been jumping around. I've shared in this podcast, I think, a couple times, finding different meetings. I left one meeting because I was sort of sick of doing the steps, or at least reading them, and went to another meeting, which turned out to be a step meeting, added another Saturday meeting, which is another step meeting, and then last night ended up going back to my original step meeting because those other two meetings were on the same step, and I was reading the same step twice a week, so ay. But back to my original meeting, back to step one, and, you know, it's crazy how the first step keeps evolving in my life. And, you know, I shared yesterday that I never had that big relief, right? The big secret out of the bag. I never had that moment where I said, all right, everybody, I think I actually have a drinking problem. That's what's going on. You know, everybody in my life knew I drank. I drank with everybody. We all drank together. That's sort of one of the problems with alcohol is that, you know, we do it together. It's social. It's socially accepted. You know, when I was doing other shit back in California, nobody was joining in, right? They all looked down their nose. They all had their opinions, right, as they sipped their big glasses of wine and whiskey, right? But when I got into both feet into drinking, I was part of the club. And so when that moment came where I, you know, had to confess that I actually think I drink too much and my life has become unmanageable, I never really got that great moment, right?
Just let your feelings roll on by. And don't wear fear, or nobody will know.
let your hair and let your feelings out instead. And don't be shy, just let your feelings roll on by, 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 on by. You know love is better than a song. Let your feelings roll on by, and don't wear fear, or nobody will know you're there.
Don't wear fear, because nobody will know you're there. That's awesome. Pearl Jam. I don't know if that's a Pearl Jam song, but Don't Be Shy. Great, great song. Perfect for me this day. You know, the like I was saying, that first step never gave me that moment. You know, I shared, I think, the other day where, you know, many, many times in my life, I would get to this, you know, moment where it just, I was in a corner. I had no other option. You know, I was a huge liar to my parents. I would do so many stupid things, and I'd just lie about it. And it would all finally come to a moment where I finally was forced in the corner, and they're all staring at me, and I'd say, yes, fine, yes, I've been ditching school, or yes, I've been smoking pot. And there would be this huge reset, you know, all of the lies that I'd told for the past, whatever it's been, whether it was a week, 2 weeks, a month, were all wiped away and we got to start fresh. And I think I didn't have that with the first step, but the one thing I did have is I sort of drew a line in the sand from that point on. From that point on, I was an alcoholic. And I always would think about that. And it at least gave me some bearings. Like, I'm either working towards continuing to be an alcoholic, or I'm working towards not being an alcoholic. And preferably, I wanted to work towards not being an alcoholic. So as far as that goes, putting that line in the sand, yes, it was a great starting point for me. But, you know, I would also look at this step, and I shared this last night. You know, I came in, and I say this all the time, but it's true. At least for me, man, I came into this program as a victim of alcoholism, and it just changed everything for me. I was a victim of life. I was a victim of life. And what that means is, as a self-centered person, everything has to go my way. And if it doesn't, I'm a victim, right? I can't tell you how to fix it. I can't tell you how to change it. I can only tell you the problem. And that was how my whole life was. And that's called zero accountability, zero responsibility, taking, you know, not taking any responsibility for any of my actions. It was always, always somebody else's or something's fault. And I came into this program the same exact way. I came in as a victim of alcoholism. Like, of course I'm coming in the program. Look at me. Jesus, right? This alcohol has got me in a lot of problems. And so when I did the steps, I've said this before, it was a 12 task, and it's all fear, right? It's all, I was unaware, right? And to be honest, nobody has ever sort of explained that to me. I don't know if it's explainable. I don't know, like I'm sitting down doing this podcast because I like doing the podcast and I like sort of sharing my experience, right? But I think more than likely, most people have to just kind of experience this on their own. You know, I was at the meeting last night, which is an awesome meeting. And, you know, people kept talking about, there was a guy that shared, like, when he first came into the program, how he, you know, he would come to a meeting and he would just sort of weep, right? Tears would just come down his face and he didn't understand why. And I think that happened to, you know, I shared that in the podcast the other day. I was so overwhelmed with emotions when I got sober because I had been numbing myself for so long, right? It's like, you know, it's like being sick. I've been sick. I don't even know, you know, I'm pretty even keel, right? And then I get sick and I start adding things like Advil and I start adding nose spray, right? And then I start taking Theraflu. These are all the things I just got done going through. And all of a sudden it changes my my levels, right? I don't know where I'm at. And it takes a few days so I can start to settle down and start to feel like, okay, what am I still sick, or are these just rebounds from taking medication, which I don't particularly like to do. And then some of it was actually that, you know, I shared in the podcast that I was using nose spray. Afrin. Ugh. But, you know, my nose sounds like shit. I feel perfect. I feel great today, but my nose does not. So I have to wait. I have to let it kind of heal and get back to normal, and then I can determine, you know, how sick I still am, right? And I think that's part of, like, when we get sober, it's just such a flood of emotions, right? I always say it takes a lot of work to be normal. In my first months of recovery, I thought I was fucking Superman. I thought I was the best human being on the planet. I'm like, how come you can't be awesome like me? I'm sober. Like, I'm not drinking anymore. All of you people that drink are pieces of shit because I'm not drinking, right? But I'd never lived. It had been a long time since I'd been a sober human being amongst other people. And I'd been at the bottom for so long that when I just came up just as close to being normal, I felt like I was amazing. You know, that's why it's great to have a sponsor. They say, hey, you know, chill out. You know, you're just doing normal shit. Don't tear something patting yourself on the back, right? And it's true. You know, I always thought I was just so fantastic. And it takes a lot of work to be normal. And so, you know, it's just kind of letting it all settle in. That's why it's so important, at least it was for me, to have a sponsor. You know, I've said this before. You can go to New York City by yourself and leave and hate the city, or you can go to New York City with a person that knows the city, and you can become the biggest fan, right? And I think that's the same thing with this program. If you come in and try to do it on your own, because you just don't want... Well, a lot of people, they just don't have the courage to ask a person to be their sponsor, right? The fear. How could this person like me? They're going to say, no one's going to like me. I'm a piece of shit. And everybody wants to help everybody. And so a lot of people don't get a sponsor just because they can't push past the fear of asking, right? I've experienced that as well. I do not know where I would be today if Ron M. hadn't asked me to be my temporary sponsor. If he hadn't come up to me and said, hey, man, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. We're going to go to a meeting every day. Here's my number. I'm going to need you to call me every day. And we'll see where we can go. And I was like, you got it, man. Whew. Saved me the trouble of asking somebody, right? But, you know, eventually it would be time for me to find a real sponsor. And I was petrified. You know, luckily I had Ron M. to fall back on, because if I couldn't get my shit together and ask somebody, and it didn't, you know, Ron didn't say, hey, it's time for you to find a sponsor. It just, you know, Ron was great at being a temporary sponsor. I actually like being a temporary sponsor. I don't particularly find myself a great sponsor. That could be some dumb voice in my head telling me that I'm not good at it, but I just don't, you know, my wife and our friend, we had lunch yesterday at Panera, and it was funny because I could see a couple tables over, a friend of mine who's in the program was working with a newcomer. You know, they were having like that meeting, that lunch date, that initial, you know, when you first start trying to find sobriety and you start working with the sponsor, you have that place you meet, right? It's at Panera or it's at Starbucks or wherever it may be. And you sit down and you talk about the first couple steps and, you know, trying to get recovery. And I could see my buddy over there having one of those lunch moments with a new person. And I thought it was awesome. But, you know, it's just your eyes are, I mean, I could just see the person was just, when we come out of this blackness that we've been in, our eyes are just so wide open for whatever comes our way. But over time, right? And like I said, it's can only say so much, right? I can only share so much. We have to live through it. And was the cool thing that when I was talking to my buddy last night, you know, this is a guy that came into the program who said, hey, I just, you know, one day I just didn't want to drink anymore and I started coming to meetings and that's been great. And I was like, Okay, that's fine. Typically, I can only really speak for myself. I've never come in because I got exhausted of drinking vodka. I've never come in and said, oh, man, you drink too much. Let's go get recovery. I absolutely needed my ego to be devastated. And, I mean, big devastation. Like, my ego took a bus trip down to Florida for the summer. And which was cool because I was left sort of in this humble state, open and willing enough, right, to go to a meeting every day, to talk to Ron M., to sit down and do one-on-one, read the steps, right? I had the devil hadn't come back yet. And but it, the devil comes back, and we start to revert back. But talking to my buddy last night, you know, his story is his story. I'm not going to argue with it. Whatever, you're here. But he's starting to feel serenity, right? It's the bait for me, at least. Serenity is just removal of fear. No fear, you're serene. You know, we're self-centered people, and we have a deficiency in God, or I have a deficiency in God. And when I start to realize, and that's the other thing I was thinking about last night, is that, you know, everything I've done in my life, I've sort of, you know, just showed up, and it was sort of pre-written, and I just sort of went with the program, and it sort of allowed me to just live the life that I live. But today I'm realizing that a lot of things in my life, I shouldn't say a lot. There's a couple things, basically a relationship with a higher power. What I think is good isn't always good, and what I think is bad isn't always bad, right? You know, as a person that's self-centered and living on self-will, anything that serves me, anything that I get rewarded with, anything that saves me work, anything that saves me trouble, anything that makes my life easier is good. Anything that makes my life difficult, anything other than what I want is bad. And I think, and that's just in early in my life. I think we all think that, right? Oh, I get that. Oh, awesome. That's good, right? And not realizing that, you know, when we have to work for something, right? When we have to put our own money into it, our own sweat and tears into it, then we find appreciation, then we find gratitude, then we know what went into it. But when something is given to us, which is the easier way, right? That's the easiest. Oh, I can have that for free. Thank you. There's no work involved. There's no humility. It's just self-serving. But self likes that. So self tells me that was good. And that's how my whole life has been. If it's easy and it gives me something, that's awesome. Right? Like the lottery, right? The lottery is the ultimate easy reward, right? You just go in, you give them money, and they pick some numbers. And if you get the right numbers, they give you a shitload of money, right? Easy peasy, chicken squeezy. But that's the ultimate trip to hell, I think, right? I do not play. I don't even buy a ticket. As soon as I think I buy a ticket, like I remember buying tickets, right? I used to buy a lot of lottery tickets because I wanted to win a lot of money. And my mind would go on these journeys of all the wonderful things I was going to do for people. It was like my ego was going to China Buffet and just having a smorgasbord of food, right? It was just because not only had I not won the lottery yet, but just buying the ticket and just the idea of maybe winning sent me on a self, blew out my elbow, pat myself on the back, helping all sorts of people. Right, because that's what I would do. I would lay in bed. Okay, if I won $1 million, $10 million, first of all, I'm going to pay off my parents' house, right? Because they're awesome and they've stuck by me. And then I'm going to help all my friends. But the reality is, if I did win the money, this is typical me. If I did win the money, right? If I won $100 million, I'd be like, nah. Yeah, if I give you money, then I'm not going to have a whole $100 million, right? It's like I am sick. And there's never enough. And it would be a nightmare. Nightmare. So I do not play the lottery. I believe that everything that I have to work for. I don't always wish it was like that, really. You know, there's parts of me, I'm still self-centered, right? I'm still self-serving. There's days, right, I wish that life was a little easier. My God, it's a grind sometimes. And it's a lot of fear, especially now. And, you know, I know these steps can teach me how to remove fear out of my life. And I do it on, I have moments, right? I have moments, but sometimes self just likes to be wallow around in the mud. And it's pretty sad sometimes. And, you know, days I just get more consumed by fear than others. But the steps teach me, you know, I remember when I first came into the program, and over the years, people used to say, well, what step are you working on? And I'd be like, I don't know, shit, what are you talking about, right? But today I really can I can see how each step plays a role. Like I can have a situation going on, and I could say, what step is this, right? And it's cool, right? I dig that. I dig that I can actually find things in these steps to help remind me where I've probably gone off the tracks. And it's usually just this battle with self-centeredness, this battle of self-will. You know, if someone wants to give me something, I should say, you know, hey, no. One of the things that I'm going through right now is, and I shared this, I think, the other day, is that, you know, we have another house. And, you know, I was pretty firm in what I thought I wanted to do with this house. And I shared this the other day. It was always going to be save the house, give it to my kids, and, you know, so they could make their lives easier, right? But the reality is, I don't know if I can do that. I mean, my ego wants me to do that. My ego wants to be the greatest dad in the entire world and leave my kids a house. But it isn't. I don't think that's going to happen because I don't know if we can afford to do all that. And honestly, I'm sort of tired of being poor. I mean, we're not poor, but I'm tired of the struggle. But see, there I go. You know, the struggle is what keeps me humble, right? The struggle is what keeps me grounded. You know, when I start to, you know, the discussion about selling this house, and all of a sudden we're talking about maybe taking a trip, my wife, you know, we, summer after summer after summer, we don't go anywhere. We stay home, which is good, right? Looks bad, seems bad. It's probably very good for us. In fact, it is good for us because it's gotten us to this point. But the self-centered side of me is like, you know, we need to take a trip, right? And then all of a sudden, we were going to take the whole family. And I really want to take a trip to Utah. I think Utah looks amazing. I've never been there. I've never been up in that part of the country. I really want to go to Utah. And my wife's like, well, we need to go on a cruise. And we need to take all the kids. And I'm like, fuck. And all of a sudden, now we're about $25,000 into trips. This is what happens, and it's a shame. And so part of me is like, well, I don't want to sell this house then because we're just going to spend the money. But then the other part of me is like, I don't want to spend any money fixing up the house. So I'm in a bit of I'm a little off the reservation at the moment because I have, you know, potentially we could sell our house and make a little bit of money. And the other thing, though, is realizing that I'm not going to be able to give it all to my kids, right? I'm not going to be able to leave everything to my kids because I'm only 55, right? I still got a chunk of time that I got to make. And listen, I don't want to work forever. You know, this was a house I bought back in 1999 when I had just gotten sober. My dad had, actually, I shouldn't say that. My dad bought the house. My dad bought the house and he was like, listen, if you want to stay in Delaware, you know, you pay me the rent. Here's your place to live. And I was like, sounds great. And he goes, now if we make a little money, you know, in a few years, because back then I was like, I want to leave. I hate Delaware. I want to go back to New Mexico or I want to go back to California. And my dad's like, listen, live in the house for a few years, build a little equity, sell it. If we can make a few $1,000s, you can use it. You can have that money towards helping you get yourself to wherever it is you want to go. And I was like, all right. Thank you, Father. Right. Thank you, Dad. A lot of people don't have that opportunity. Luckily, I did. But listen, that house was $111,000. It's a lot of money, but compared to the price of shit today, it's not. It was reasonable, and it allowed me to pay my father, which kept our money in the family, and it was great. And over time, the problem is we had we became popular all of a sudden down here, and the house went up like tripled in value, and then my first wife and I ended up buying the house off of my father, not for $111,000, though I can tell you that it was more like $250,000, and then got divorced. Then I had to buy my ex-wife out, right? That sucked, right? That was terrible. Very good, though. You know, very absolutely what I needed to do. Absolutely part of the deal. Absolutely the deal when I broke the deal of our marriage by drinking like a fool. Hated that, right? I remember my sponsors like, because I, you know, this was, we got divorced like at the peak of the housing market back in like 2006. I don't even remember the date. I think Dave was born in 2005, so it must have been around 2006. And the house was like valued at like $350,000, and it was crazy. And she's like, yep, that's what I want. You can either pay me or I'll buy the house. And so I had to buy her out. That hurt. But my sponsor's like, doesn't matter. He goes, listen, this is annoying, but I can promise you in 5 years this won't matter. I can promise you in 5 years you'll have a relationship with your ex-wife, which will matter. Right? And so I paid, and he was right. Today, I look back on that. That money doesn't even matter anymore. What does matter is her and I have a great relationship. We've raised our son together. Not together, but as a, you know, a team. And he's doing great. So, you know, Matt was right. It wouldn't matter. But these were all, you know, ended up with the house, and now here I am so many years later and raised all the kids in this house, and it was a great, and it's like a, it's a double wide. It's a Class C mobile home. You know, it's a modular home. It came in on wheels, and it was perfect. It's exactly what I needed for the time. But we're now, you know, so many years later, and we've moved to a different house, and we still have this house, and I have to figure out what to do with it. And I'm realizing that my ego's been telling me I wanted to do something, but the reality is I probably need to sell it so that we can continue to survive. You know, like I said, we're in a one-income family. I just have to, what I really need to do is figure out a plan that if I do sell this house, what I'm going to do with this money. I can't just put it in the bank because I'm afraid we will spend it, and I do not want to spend it. You know, I want to subsidize ourselves, due to the fact that my wife is a stay-at-home mom. And to be honest, we're doing just fine. We are living in the, we're living the exact life we should live. You know, there are moments where we should run out of money, like the other day. It's just telling me that, you know, we're not doing too much excessive spending. We're just basically living on a budget. And that's cool, right? You know, yesterday I got nervous. I got worried. But then I was also doing payroll. I shared in the podcast. I'm doing payroll yesterday. Did payroll, got payroll out, money's back in the bank, yada, yada, yada. All right. Anyway, let me, I just wanted to come and sit down and chat. You know, whatever. Hope everyone's doing good. How's everyone's sobriety? You hanging in there? Feel like going back out? Feeling good? Do you dig this weather? I do. All right, daily reflections. Avoid controversy. Nice. October 31st. All history affords us a spectacle of striving nations and groups finally torn asunder because they were designed for or tempted into controversy. Others fell apart because of sheer self-righteousness while trying to enforce upon the rest of mankind some millennium of their own specification. Excuse me. That's 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 176. As an AA member and sponsor, I know I can cause real damage if I yield to temptation and give opinions and advice on another's medical, marital, or religious problems. I am not a doctor, counselor, or lawyer. I cannot tell anyone how he or she should live. However, I can share how I came through similar situations without drinking and how AA steps and traditions help me in dealing with my life. Yeah. That's what I'm doing, right? I think. Hopefully I'm not telling people. I've always liked how AA is like, for me, right? Which means for you. When people say for me, I always feel like they're saying for you, but they're saying for me because we're not allowed to say for you, right? We're only allowed to talk about it in our person, not in their person. So, I don't know. I enjoy sitting down. I really like playing music is really what I like doing, and I love being sober, and I love the voice that tells me don't do it because I say, you know what? I'm going to do it, and I'm going to enjoy it. I hope everyone has a great day, and Happy Halloween. Later.
You're there. You're there. Let your feelings roll on by. And don't wear fear, or nobody will know you're there. Just lift your head and let your feelings out instead. And don't be shy, just let your feelings